a little something on it as I go along. So, is there anybody that needs English translation? I mean, Slovenian translation.
Not at all.
Okay, well, if you want to do that, then can you sit at the back and translate for them? Or? That you can ask questions at any time on anything. So you can interrupt my reading if you like. Otherwise, there will be intervals, probably every two sentences, the way I usually am, where I will stop and say something, add some extra, whatever. But really, two things that, hard to say. Europeans, Western Europeans and Americans are generally not shy. In general. You know, they have this thing that you've got to prove it to me. And so they'll ask questions. It's a cultural thing. I find, in, at least in the Balkans, and I haven't done a lot of preaching in Eastern Europe, but to some degree I have, and whatever, that people are also shy about asking questions. Indians aren't. But questions are really important to understanding things. Basically, when you sit for satsang in a group of devotees, and if there's somebody there to value their association, it's like milking a cow. You have to draw out as much as you can. And it works for the person asking the question, and it works for the speaker also. Because the speaker is trying his or her best to be a medium, not to, you know, it's Krishna who hopefully is inspiring or speaking, and Krishna is asking also. Krishna's asking and Krishna's speaking. But, okay, so does anyone, any questions on the rules of the game? This is a book called Radha Damodar Vilas. It's written by, compiled, it's written by also Vyasati. He wrote about two devotees. One of them is right here, Vishnujana Swami. I suspect that he was a great inspiration to Indradyumna Swami. Huh? Yeah. That's a great inspiration. Okay. So. Oh yeah, they were, it's funny also, they had been excommunicated, not excommunicated, but almost, because they tried to say that Prabhupada was God in New Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was furious and told them that they had to leave the temple and go traveling, and devotees were not to have so much contact with them. But even in that condition, there were great personalities. is funny. We've got some great pictures. Brahmananda, when he came to India after years and years. And so they came and bombed him to see good old friends. So I really organized for them to preach at that building. Telling all kinds of stories and poetry and ecstasy, and I took them to Jubu also. So I've got this great photo of me and seated on a little asana, and the guard the moon on one side of the asana, and on the other side with a chair. Except they had a wide angle lens that was big enough to get us all in. First day of had their Gargamani, as he was known, probably given the name Gargamani. He has his obnoxious side. But anyway, all four of them were traveling and preaching. They did a lot of, they opened Gainesville Center, which later became Alachua, and Vishnujana was in southern Texas. He did a lot of preaching there. They went all over. So, and then China. What can we say about China? He was the Have you seen this book? Yeah. Really, where did you see it?
I got some friends who
have it. It's Vyasaki, but people call him Vyasaki. It's Vyasaki. Anyway, I got it as a present too. Otherwise, I wasn't miser that I am. I wasn't going to pay it. It's about $30 hookers. Not cheap. But it's great. I'm glad. Yeah. So, Prabhupada, this is starting. Light, it's called Light of the Bhagavat. And it's just starting. It's the life of Prabhupada in capsule form, going quickly through it. Bhakti Siddhanta has just left the world, and Prabhupada got that famous letter. He wrote a letter, "How can I please you?" Bhakti Siddhanta Prabhupada was in Puri, and he was ill. He was only 62, actually, when he left the world. He was young. And many people say that he wasn't very happy with a number of his disciples. It was one of the reasons that hastened his departure, but anyway, for whatever reason, he left early. So Prabhupada wrote him a letter asking him. Prabhupada met him twice in Calcutta. Well, three times, I guess. He met him in Calcutta. Then he met him on Kartik Brajamandal Parikrama, and then he met him in Allahabad, Prayag, for his initiation. He got initiation in Prayag. And this is another mistake that devotees make. They say, well, I think I want to wait before I commit myself. And Prabhupada waited 11 years. But it's not like Prabhupada was in doubt. He accepted Bhakti Siddhanta on the very first meeting. But circumstance was that he had to move to Allahabad because of his business, and he had to support his family. He was always thinking about Bhaktisiddhanta the whole time. And when the Gaudiya Mutt arrived there in 1928, he was so happy to see them, and he helped start the Gaudiya Mutt there. And then when Bhaktisiddhanta came, Prabhupada immediately took Diksha. So, it, obviously it's all right if someone waits, but they shouldn't use Prabhupada's waiting as a reason to justify their own lack of conviction. One of my guy brothers, he's a handsome guy, Jewish, about 48, 49. He's got at least $1 million from his business. He's a great person, but he's still looking for the right girl. You know, someone told him Radharani's already married for a little you know, you can't wait for the next incarnation of God to take initiation. You have to accept the principle of initiation and go forward. A guru. They give you diksha. But what you're doing is you're following the guru. You have to accept the guru. That's what Krishna says. You cannot know anything unless you accept the guru. A person may act in that position. Anyway, Prabhupada took initiation, and then he went to Bombay, and that's where he first met Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami, and they helped, Prabhupada helped them start the Gaudiya Mutt in Bombay, Gwalior Tank Road. It's funny, we went there with Prabhupada in 1974, and Prabhupada had started that month in 1932, 33, 34 sometime. It's about 40 years later, and Prabhupada was so disgusted, or not so disgusted, but sort of disgusted. They had the same 5 brahmacharis as they did in 1940. They're all old. Nobody new had joined. They would give Chaitanya Charitamrita to class, and some old Bengali widows would come to hear. And they were just eating and sleeping and worshipping the deity and whatever. But Bhaktisiddhanta had a much higher standard. One who's got life, he can't preach. So then Prabhupada wrote to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that, how can I serve you? This was in 1936, December sometime. Anyway, he got a letter in December 14 from Puri that again, the same instruction that he had got in 1922. I'm fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people who are not conversant with the languages of the other members. This will do much good to yourself as well as to your audience. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher if you serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression. Here we are, Bhaktisiddhanta. It's so sort of bombastic English. Even the word bombastic, maybe bombastic for some people, means high English. The novel impression of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the people in general, as well as philosophers and religious, it's amazing how many prophetic things happened to Srila Prabhupada when he was born. The astrologer predicted that he would travel abroad and open temples. At least that's what Vyasaki writes here. There's different opinions on that. Any contact has a Well, I'm not sure whether he got it from a Brahma reader, from that Sneha, her husband. Astrologer, yeah.
Later on,
yeah. Yeah, there was, anyway, there was an astrologer. A Bengali astrologer predicted that. And then when he met Bhakti Siddhanta, he asked him to preach abroad, and then again he asked him to preach in the Western countries, and some other things too happened, which indicated Prabhupada's the person. When one strictly tries to serve one's spiritual master, everything unfolds by the arrangement of Krishna. Taking up the serious study of Bhagavad Gita, Abhay is particularly impressed with the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In connection with these, with the verse Vyavasayatmika Bhutirikaha Ikiha Kuru Nandana, Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that one should embrace the words of the spiritual master as his life and soul. Rigidly carrying out the specific instructions without caring for personal loss or gain. And then he gives the actual purport. So we read this a little earlier. Abhay is so inspired by this insight that he makes it the main tenet of his life. It becomes his raison d'être. In 1939, Abhay relocates to Calcutta. His business is failing, and he had to sell off. Actually, his business was failing partially because his sons were mismanaging his factory. He didn't get cooperation from his family at all. Seeing his determination and worthy Vaishnava qualities, his sannyasi godbrothers confer upon him the title Bhakti Vedanta, which indicates both devotion and the ultimate attainment of knowledge. In his humble manner, Abhay accepts the honor in a mood of responsibility, determined to live up to the purport of the name. That's a very nice way of expressing it. Humility doesn't mean to reject any honor that can help you in your Krishna consciousness. Just like Prabhupada said on a Vyasa song. It's not that he needed a big seat or even wanted a big seat. His own spiritual master did not use Vyasa songs except for Guru Puja or Vyasa Puja. Rather, he didn't have, to my knowledge, daily Guru Puja. But Prabhupada, he did not initiate daily Guru Puja. It was Tamal Krishna's idea. You know that story, I'm sure, right? We went for a walk on Juhu Beach, and Prabhupada's schedule was that he would walk for an hour, and hear this, he said his morning walk added 10 years to his life. So if any of you are thinking that you don't need exercise, then what you're really thinking is, I don't need 10 years extra in my life. Which is okay. Shorter can sometimes be better. Anyway, he would arrive back at the temple at Hare Krishna and Jubal, which at that time consisted of a cement house, a cement room, actually, just one room. And it had asbestos sheets, corrugated. Corrugated means, I don't know if you see these here. Asbestos sheets for roof. And then there was a, opposite the deity house, there was a darshan, or kirtan mandap. In a temple, you'll find, like in Juhu, if any of you've ever seen, there's the deities, and the floor that's directly in front of the deities, that's called the darshan mandap, or the kirtan mandap. And then down below, there's another floor that's called the pravesh mandap. But anyway, that's all we had, was a simple temple. But Prabhupada would come there for greeting the deities every morning after his walk. So there was no, like, deity room. Everything was kind of done outside. And there was a little space in behind the deities, but not much. So the pujari had brought the arti paraphernalia, and Prabhupada had a vyasas on there, but he just gave class from there. So the pujari was going to open the doors to the deities and take the deity paraphernalia in, and then close the, not deity paraphernalia, the arti paraphernalia, and close the door. When it came time for Govind down, then he would offer arti. So Prabhupada got back a little early this morning, and he sat down in his vyasasana waiting for the deity doors to open. The arti tray was there. So Tamal said, Prabhupada, can we offer to you? I don't know what prompted him to say that, because it wasn't, nobody primed him. Prabhupada didn't tell him, when I sit down. He just, it entered his mind. I'd love to ask him sometime. Prabhupada said, okay. That was the beginning. So Prabhupada accepts this title, Bhakti Vedanta, in a mood of responsibility. So if you get some position or facility, accept it, but then use it for Krishna service. As a Second World War overtakes humility, overtakes humanity, Viceroy Lynn Lithgow declares that India is at war with Germany because the British ruled India. The Indians had no war with Hitler. It's at least in their interest. Indian troops are dispatched to battlefields around Asia, and the country is plunged into deprivation. The Japanese soon take Burma and are now on the doorstep of Bengal. The British destroy Bengal's entire rice crop, fearing that it might fall into the hands of the Japanese. There's widespread famine. Hail Britannia. There's a class of British, especially in the middle of England and London, who are reputedly good diplomats, but they can be very vicious also. Many, many Indians died. died in that famine. They also created the famine to get Indians to join the war effort, because if you join the army, obviously they take care of you. In December 1942, the bombing begins. Japanese planes bomb Calcutta every day. People evacuate the city. Blackouts are mandatory. At night, the entire city is dark. In the midst of this terrible war, Abai realizes that more than ever, there is a need for Krishna consciousness in the world. With great resolve, he decides to produce a journal called Back to God at PCG. The first issue is published in 1944 on the Advent Day of his Guru Maharaj. Its 44 pages deal mostly with the crisis of war. In the article, Congregational Chanting, Abai reveals his confidence in Lord Chaitanya's prophecy with his own prophetic statement. From this foretelling, we can hope that the cult of Sankirtan will take very shortly a universal form of religious movement. And this universal religion, wherein there is no harm in chanting the name of the Lord, nor is there any question of quarrel, will continue for years, as we can know from the pages of authoritative scriptures. One night, he has a powerful dream. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appears before him, beckoning, encouraging, calling, that he leave home and take sannyas. He awakens deeply moved and ponders or thinks about its profound meaning. It will become a recurrent dream. Recurrent usually means regularly at intervals, but I probably had the dream a few times. It's not like every night. Again, devotees ask sometimes about dreams. If your dreams are Krishna conscious, in other words, if Krishna is there in your dream and is spiritual, then it's wonderful, it's very nice. But otherwise, dreams shouldn't be given very much importance. We can see here the Prabhupada did take sannyas, finally. And it was because he didn't want to. He was happy as a grihastha in the sense that he had his freedom, he had his money, etc., and he could do as he liked. And the idea of renouncing his family, he always described himself as not being very attracted to austerity, because he was his family's pet, Kishori Mukhi. His mother would always, at any time, day or night, cook for him whatever he wanted, and his father just doted on him, and, you know, he just felt, I won't take sannyas. But his wife and children just weren't cooperative at all, so it became important. Due to a lack of funds, he cannot continue publishing Back to Godhead after the second issue. Instead, Abai undertakes an English translation and commentary of the Bhagavad Gita. After the war, another nightmare hits India. Gandhi's independence movement, with its goal to unite India's different communities, fails. Instead of unity, India is partitioned in 1947. Two nations emerge, Pakistan and Hindustan. Millions of Hindus are stranded in Pakistan. Millions of Muslims are stranded in Hindustan. The great migration begins. The violence that erupts claims hundreds of thousands of lives as people of opposing faiths riot. In Calcutta, the hatred is especially poisonous. Temples and mosques are desecrated as each side tries to destroy the other's religion. Oh, Prabhupada, I don't know if he's got it in here. But, let's see, Srila Prabhupada. In Bagh Bazar, oh, here it is. In Bagh Bazar, there were heaps of dead bodies. And when it was a dead body, nobody could understand who was Hindu and who was Muslim. Simply, it was to be cleaned from the road. You know, bodily conception of life is what causes all our problems in this world. We have this body. We can live through this body, gratify the senses of the body, whatever minimum standard they require. We can raise our families, we can ambitions we have in life, we can follow those, but we have to direct everything to Krishna. Thinking that I am the body, after that comes anger, greed, lust, envy, and madness, ultimately madness. These people are not Hindus, and they're not Muslims, and they're not Christians. They're simply using that as a cover. They're just under the influence of ignorance, and they can do anything in the name of religion. Big mistake. Big, big mistake. In the confusion and turmoil of partition, Abhay's business once again fails. His employees and servants steal everything of value. He sees in this action the hand of God, an opportunity to take up full-time preaching work. His family sees otherwise. They become increasingly distant, not appreciating his dwindling financial support. He, on the other hand, regrets their lack of spiritual support. Prabhupada used to quote one verse, very famous verse, from the Bhagavatam. Yasyaham anugranami harishe taddanam shanai. If I, Prabhupada translated in different places in different ways, but one I remember is that if I like someone, then I take everything away from them. If I like someone, the first installment of my mercy is that I take everything away. So it's a little frightening if we're thinking about becoming Krishna conscious. Actually, it's better to be a devotee of Lord Shiva, because then you get all kinds of things. You get material. You know, there's a group, a Buddhist group. I've heard different stories, but they call themselves Nichiren Shoshu Buddhists. And they have these beads. And they go like this, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, and they have a little altar. Their whole thing is that if you chant this mantra, you'll become materially opulent and all your desires, material desires, will be fulfilled. And they're getting some success. I don't know if it's just the law of averages or what. You know, it's like Tirupati. There's a temple in Tirupati, and a very famous temple, and everybody knows that if you have some work to be done, you go there to Balaji and offer a donation to Balaji. And, you know, you get some result. So Mr. Mota, who was one of the League of Devotees, people who donated to Prabhupada in Bombay, he told us in Bombay that in 1925, Tirupati Balaji was just a little small temple, not very important, not many people knew about it. But the pujaris started spreading rumors that, you know, if you give to Balaji, you get double back or something like that. So within, you know, a few years, people used to come there and, you know, 50% of the people would get what they were asking for. They're probably going to get it anyway, but still, they got it. And they began to tell others about it. And the 50% who didn't get, they went away quietly and didn't, you know, nice temple, and that's all. So in that way, they grow. They grew and grew and grew. Until today, they have one crown amongst many other dresses and crowns that they put on Balaji that's worth about $7 million. Just the crown. Incredible. And so Mr. Mota was telling Prabhupada that we should start spreading rumors about Radharas Bihari. And Prabhupada said, "My God does not accept bribes." But anyway, Prabhupada, his family, Krishna took everything away from him. It's a fact, you know. It's in some ways, it's not lonely, just like a sannyasi's life. Who was it? Vinita was telling me about the loneliness of the long distance runner. There was a famous movie in the 60s. Some very famous actor played this long distance runner. You can imagine him out in the countryside running for miles and miles. Struggling to increase his strength, etc., but it's very lonely. There's nobody there with him. So this is, she sees a sannyasi's life as, you know, kind of lonely. But actually it's not. Once we passed by Yoga Pit, And we're on our way to Mayapur. We had an ambassador car. So usually the pilgrims stop and take darshan of Lord Chaitanya, take darshan of Bhakti Siddhanta. You know, Prabhupada didn't do that. He went right to Radha Madhava temple. And so later on there was some criticism that he didn't stop. Prabhupada got very angry. He said, "My Guru Maharaj is always with me. Always thinking of me." So, Krishna takes everything away, but he also gives you everything. There's no need to fear. You'll never lose by giving things to Krishna. Whatever you need to feel blissful, free from anxiety, na sochati, na kankshati, no hankering, no lamentation. Whatever you need, Krishna will fulfill all of your desires and he'll help you. You just have to be prepared for God's will. Thy will be done on earth. Your will, I will, surrender to your will, to your desires. If you have that attitude, I don't think no one here can tell me at any time in their life that if you really desire from the core of your heart to develop a loving, reciprocal relationship with Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and the Vaishnavas, that you lose in any way. One day he finds his Bhagavad Gita manuscript missing, although he had kept it safely at home. No one knows anything about it. Thoroughly disappointed, he decides to travel in an effort to fulfill the directive given by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. His heart is burning with desire to satisfy his spiritual master and execute his final instruction to preach the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anybody know what happened to that Bhagavad Gita manuscript? Well, she sold the paper in the market. You can go to the marketplace and sell paper. You know, whenever you buy in India, at least I don't know, maybe not now, but if you see these guys on the street who sell peanuts, and you know, they've got a little thing like a cone and they put it in, wrap it up and give it to you. That's from paper that they bought from the paper mart. So watch out the next time you get peanuts that it doesn't have Sanskrit writing on it. At age of 57, he journeys to Jhansi and establishes the League of Devotees in 1953. He goes out on Sankirtan every day, enthusiastically chanting the Maha Mantra with a group that increases up to 50 people. He maintains regular contact with his family and sends them money whenever possible. Over time, however, the climate in Jhansi becomes less favorable and finally sours. I don't know why you use that word. Anyway, it gets pretty cold in Jhansi in the wintertime. Soon after returning home, his wife sells his Bhagavatam one day. Oh, Bhagavatam has got here, but I was always told it was the Bhagavad Gita manuscript. Anyway, his wife sells the Bhagavatam one day to purchase tea biscuits. 35 years of family life have finally come to this. Disappointed but determined to buy Sikh shelter in Mathura with his godbrother, B.P. Keshav Maharaj. Actually, I believe he also gave his wife an ultimatum. He said, either you give up coffee and tea, or you give up me. She chose tea. She was actually very, the whole family was very upset when Prabhupada left. In fact, one of his sons, Gaur Mohan Day, Mathura Mohan Day, Gaur Mohan was his father. Mathura Mohan Day, after Prabhupada left, he claimed that all of ISKCON belonged to him. It was all the property of Prabhupada, his personal property, and he, as his heir, should receive all of that. And we were fighting in court for years and years. And finally, it was settled out of court. And he actually, he got money, but he had to pay off lawyers and this and that. He really didn't get anything out of it. But still, he used to raise amongst his arguments that Prabhupada had mistreated the family, had left them dependent, and, you know, they were all, except for Vrindavan Day, who was quite kind. I remember because I had to, Prabhupada bought them a flat in Calcutta,
nice flat. I had to arrange for that flat and get it purchased and get it furnished. And I was going up and down for my problems with structures. I didn't appreciate the problem. Somehow.
There's a question.
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised to read one book. The person who was released in Shannon Bhagavata was not Siddhanta, not Bhaktivedanta.
Yeah.
Yes. You know the person who was in Shannon Bhagavata.
Well, the way I always heard the translation of it was that he will preach freely all over the world and Bhakti Siddhanta will spread Mahaprabhu's mission all over. Will travel all over the world and spread it. But, I mean, there's a lot lost in translation, but I think it's unfair because at the height, I mean, Bhakti Siddhanta probably gives all the credit to him. That's not a problem. If they want to give credit to Bhakti Siddhanta, no problem. Prabhupada would agree, would be the first one to agree. But what they want to say is, now I am, and Bhakti Siddhanta was that person, and I am in the life of Bhakti Siddhanta, so I give the credit. In other words, Prabhupada doesn't minimize my, he's not something special over what I am. And a lot of them used to say that Prabhupada was successful because he was a businessman. He didn't spread Radha Nuga Bhajan. Prabhupada is the only one. You can't just come to the Western world. I mean, how many disciples does the Dalai Lama have? The Dalai Lama. Hardly any. I mean, he has followers who say, yeah, I'm a Buddhist, but they still do all kinds of nonsense. But Prabhupada came and he lived with us, he trained us in high standards. He was an aristocratic gentleman. He lived with the hippies. He performed so many austerities. He risked his life. How can he not be an empowered person? He should have died in 1969. That was the end of his life. 70. That was it. That was the astrologian, you know, that was his quota. But Krishna, he said Krishna's extended his life. And his preaching work, he lived another 11, 12 years. Huh? So, Prabhupada wrote so many books in the English language. And Bhakti Siddhanta so many times ordered Prabhupada to go to the West. If Bhakti Siddhanta was considering of doing it himself, why would he order others to do it? Doesn't make sense. These people are just envious, and we have to, you know, fold our hands and say, Hare Krishna, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, and go on with our work. We cannot expect a lot of cooperation from the Gaudiya Mutt anyway. They have their own agenda. Bhakti Siddhanta left early because he was not pleased. He said, Prabhupada will do in his own time, he will come out successful. They're so envious. And Narayan Maharaj is the worst. I was there in 73 in Mayapur, and he used to, you know, practically blaspheme Prabhupada. Why he is taking the name Bhaktivedanta? Why he is giving sannyas to foreigners? Why he is doing this? He's the most outspoken. Yeah. What did I say?
Why did he take Bhaktivedanta?
Oh, I'm sorry. Why did he take the name Prabhupada? I've got no problems with any of the senior members of the Keshav Maharaj. He didn't have a good opinion of ISKCON, but he spoke at a gathering in Orissa, and one of my godbrothers, well, anyway, Bhagavat Das, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was so fired up. Big sannyas, you know, he wanted to be one of the boys. That was his main motivation. He recognized as Dandiwala. So he was telling everybody in India that Prabhupada's going to give him sannyas. But, you know, he was preaching in Africa. And the Indians in Africa are really... a lot of Gujaratis, they're not, at that time they were quite, their culture was still intact, and they loved to feed sannyasis and sadhus, and they loved to have their sannyasis nice and plump, fat. Yeah. So Bhagavad had become very big. So then Prabhupada didn't give him sannyas. He said, too fat and unfit. But he was a good speaker, kind of charismatic. So Madhav Maharaj or Keshav, he was at a gathering in Bhagavad. This was in Bhuvaneshwar, I believe, and the Madhav Maharaj was speaking, and Bhagavad was also speaking. I think it's Madhav, because I remember I went to Madhav in 72 to his Vyas Puja with Guru Das, and I gave him the latest Bhagavatam, which I had brought from America, two or three books or something. He received and he said, yes, I am senior to your Guru Maharaj. That was his sweet, encouraging comment. Not, oh, these are very nice, your Guru Maharaj is doing nice service. No, I am senior to your Guru Maharaj. Okay. So, after the lecture, then, the next thing is he shows up at Prabhupada's disappearance festival in Calcutta, and he's glorifying Prabhupada quite nicely. And he said, I never understood until I heard one brahmachari from your mutt speak in Orissa. And he gave such a nice lecture, it was better than most of our sannyasis can preach. Those kind of devotees, Puri Maharaj, both Bhakti Bhai Bhava and Bhakti Pramod, they're never envious of Prabhupada. But others, Prabhupada said at Stinson Beach when he proposed to Mukunda Maharaj, or when Mukunda Maharaj rather proposed, and some devotees proposed that Prabhupada was going back to India, he might not live. And they proposed, should we bring one of your godbrothers here to take over your preaching? Prabhupada just kind of day was speaking, was crying. He said, "Did my Guru Maharaj save me?" He said, "My Guru Maharaj was the only one who saved me." He said, "If they speak even one word differently, that they'll spoil everything." So we've seen it's true. They'll debate with us, or they'll change Prabhupada's stand on where does the jiva come from. They'll, you know, so many things. Lord Chaitanya should not have peacock feathers. They'll pick anything. We should all go and Radhakund, take Babaji, and just do some of this. Prabhupada gave us Bhakti Siddhanta. Maybe Bhakti Siddhanta did preach all over the world, but it was through Srila Prabhupada. So whether you choose Bhakti Siddhanta or Srila Prabhupada, they're one. They're both Sena Bhakti generals. Is there any other questions? Can we do part of a Krishna Jana? Yes. I really got to figure this out now, because which one is Abhinanda? Because I get so embarrassed. How do you tell the difference? Huh? Where's the wife? Huh? Yeah?
What?
How do you tell the difference?
For me, just keep the difference.
You know, there's a story of Lord Shiva, and what's it in the Ramayana? There's a story, not Indra actually, Indra. And what was it? What was her name? Bhrigu. Not Bhrigu, was it Bhrigu? Or she? Was living with his wife in a very simple hut. His wife was very, very beautiful. And Indra was lusty after her. So one day when Bhrigu, I think, went out. Does anyone know this story? Is it Bhrigu? Huh? You think so? I also think so. So you're thinking so. It's not helping. Anyway, we'll get back to you with the actual names, but I think it's pretty good. So he went out to have to take his ablutions, and that wasn't just a bath, but he would do his morning yajna and food and everything. So some time there, so Indra came in completely, you know, he assumed the form of Bhrigu, he looked just like Bhrigu, and he entered the hermitage, and he approached her for sex, and she knew, although he looked exactly like Bhrigu, but she knew that it wasn't her husband. There were different things, but the most important thing was she had this transcendental sense, or six senses. Okay, how do you tell? Just
what's the most remarkable
difference? How can I tell? Are you identical twins? No. Is there any difference in your facial features? Oh, I'm just blind. Huh?
They
what?
Can stand one beside the other, and then you can see.
Oh, okay. Go over there. I want to see. Because I can't. I've got to know who I'm talking to. Huh? Forehead. Yours is a little broader, and his is more pointed. Huh? Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true, yeah. Yeah. A little bit longer. So, I mean, because I don't even know who I'm talking to now. So Abhinanda has a little bit longer face. Huh? Okay, what else? Oh, yeah. But now you can't tell because you're free from that heavy responsibility. Huh?
Well, it's always with the child. I mean, you must take care about the child.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to.
Well, he only has one boy. So that can be a joy. Oh, well, I can't even tell that, huh? Okay. You know, I was just thinking, Janaka's little child, Sita's child, she's a very good example of, if anyone ever challenges you about vegetarianism, how old is she? Huh? 20 months. She's 20 months. She's got 4 months to go. She's 4 months short of 2 years. She's big and she's strong. And her mother was quite, it was a cesarean. It was a, what do you call it, cesarean section. She had to cut her neck. Huh?
No.
Oh, she was born within time. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, and there's a law here in Slovenia that you have to feed your child meat for the first 2 years. Well, that's But here's an example of a child whose mother was, she was anemic at birth, right? Huh? Anyway, the child is pretty strong. All right. Somebody asked a question. Was it Abhinanda or, oh, was it that?
I want to ask you, what are your relations on the basis of your argument that
if you were going to be my publisher, I would tell you. I could write a book. But I probably won't. Well, it all began 52 years ago. I made some mistakes when I was a kid. When I was, I guess I was a teenager, 19, and I was in San Francisco. Actually, started in San Francisco, ended up in Canada. I started taking drugs, Now, I started out, I was very straight up until the time I was 18. I played so many sports. I think it's really good for children to play sports. It can keep them out of a lot of nonsense. It can be any sport. Mountain climbing or whatever, bicycling or that's what Mayapur did, you see, so his brains are all scrambled. but in Alachua, it's great in Alachua, the devotees there are all into football. And incredible, when we were just there and the Dean Krishna's kids were, both of them had games and I was saying the Dean Krishna was my old friend. And they had to go out to their kids' games, so we went with them. You know, it's really funny to see the coach saying, "Arjuna, pass it over to Krishna." But that's what happened. There were so many devotees in that community that they started there one of the top communities in that whole area of Florida, because our devotees don't have a whole lot to do and the kids practice their football. It's quite a big thing for them. But I know in my life it kept me out of a lot of nonsense. But when I was 18, my 12-year-old brother gave me a joint. He insisted that I take it, or I was just not with it. I was out of touch. So, I forced myself. Didn't like it. And I kept warning him that, you know, don't take this, it leads on to heavier drugs. And anyway, by the time he convinced me this was it, it took me about a year and a half or so, and I was shooting heroin. Didn't do it much, you know, before I realized it was just terrible. But that was long enough for me to get hepatitis C, maybe a few times. They figure that 90% of the IVDU, intravenous drug users, contract hepatitis and or AIDS. So I had it for some 35 years. Well, say I got it in 68, and then by 1997, it's almost 30 years. 1997, I had no symptoms, and whatever. Then I had a very heavy traumatic experience. Nothing is traumatic in me, in my life. Nothing has been traumatic except for things in relationship with devotees. It involved the devotees I had served for so long in Bombay. Group of them, for no reason, no fault of my own, turned on me, and they came to Mayapur where the GDC meetings were going on and wanted me to resign as the temple president. Dhiraj Swami and Radhana Swami had specifically asked and pushed me to becoming the temple president. I was already the GDC, co-GDC. They wanted me to take charge, so they figured I was the only one strong enough to handle the situation, so I did it. So they came to Mayapur to speak to the GDC, that was a call it, conflict of interest. And anyway, it developed into a problem. And some very close people to me just practically deserted me. It's almost like getting stabbed in the back. Where's my book? And then, so, okay, I resigned. But I was very upset that it happened in that way. And then the next thing, because I was planning on using Bombay for the Mayapur project, I was also in charge of fundraising for the Mayapur temple, the planetarium. So again, another friend of mine influenced Hari Geshe, and I was dropped from the Mayapur project. And that was very dear to me. So I just collapsed. It was so heavy. I didn't know. I couldn't think. I became stunned. And I went to Samadhi. I just began to talk to Prabhupada. Threw myself on the ground. I was really crying. I couldn't figure out how I misplaced you. I know I must have, but... And I think that's what exacerbated my hepatitis. I know it was. Because the mind and the liver are closely interrelated. So then, from there, I came to Europe after that, into Croatia, actually. People I didn't even know were coming, encouraging me, not regarding that, but just offering well wishes and encouraging me to preach. So then I started to realize that Prabhupada was taking care of me. I really got a strong sense. And I also realized, I mean, sometimes Krishna pushes you. He takes everything away, or even he pushes you to a great test. And so I took it that I was suffering, but it was an opportunity for me. And Prabhupada was so kind to me. I really took it that he was being especially kind to me because he knew that I was stubborn and crooked, and he wanted to polish me a little bit, a lot, that he needed special acid to get the dirt out. Then I also realized that I want Krishna to forgive me. Sins, both in the last life and this life. And in every way, my sins. So I realized if I'm asking Krishna to forgive me, then I have got to forgive others who I think may have perpetrated or been the cause of something. I really understood that you can't see yourself as a victim of someone else's actions. Everything is under the control of Krishna. and he's your ever well wisher. That message just kept going through my head, and because I didn't know where to turn, I was hurt, I was wounded, I was deeply wounded, and Prabhupada just. Showed me so many things. So then I sort of thought that there was just no problem with death. I started to study, and there's basically no cure for cirrhosis. And put hepatitis into remission. But once the liver is hardened, you can't live without your liver. So I saw it's a definite possibility. And then I thought about it, and I didn't have attachment for my family. And I knew Prabhupada was all I had. So I have to leave this. The experience, pain never bothered me much. So the experience of death didn't disturb me. Transition also didn't bother me. Whatever way you want to look at it, either I become nothing, you know, that's the end of my suffering, nirvana, or if there is rebirth, then what have I done? I've given. Years of my life at that time. Prabhupada service, I've always been a company man. I'm a scum man. Prabhupada man. So, but that's something terribly wrong, and let me be born as a worm. If I've done any service, I've not been served in another situation. So, I was ready to go. Krishna almost put me there twice. Keeps playing. I've always thought Krishna had a tremendous sense of humor. I loved humor. I always thought Krishna was playing with me. Just, every time I think I've got it all together, just, shakes it up, lets me know I'm not the controller. And then, over the last year or so, one thing that Prabhupada did was very nice to go and take care of. So we discussed, sometimes I treat him like my equal. discuss with him. And somehow I'm ready now. I can't do things. If I want to be humble, it has to be with responsibility. So I'll try some things. Can't try everything. I've had a zillion people tell me a zillion ways to get cured. I can't do them all. So I've tried a few. Now I've got a few miracle ones on the line. And if Krishna gives me a little extension, then I'll use that for what I love to do. I love to be a devotee. I love to take prasadam. I love to chant. Pure devotees. I love kirtan. It's all nectar. And I'll try to preach. I'm older, so it's my responsibility. I'm not a good preacher, but I know a little bit. I'll get better. Yeah. I'm still learning a lot. It's great. I wouldn't change if I had to do it over. I wouldn't change it. Adversity has been very, very good for me. It's Krishna's mercy. It's really what it is. Krishna's mercy. You gotta see it as Krishna's mercy. And then it becomes his mercy, whether it is or it is, whether it was or it wasn't. I'm really happy. I have a small little family. Nothing that'll get on the charts. I'm happy. They're all nice people. Since I got the encephalopathy, now maybe it was there before. Brain fog. Hard, cold, crass. Who's a translator? the opposite of class. Heard of high class? Low crass. C-R-A-S. I'm a New Yorker. Choice. But I really think that serving even the smallest place can give the greatest satisfaction. Serve my Guru Maharaj, but I know he wants me to serve the Vaishnavas. At the end, I'm smart. The highest thing. Service and humility. Radha Raman, what are you doing running off with prasadam? Are we going to get anything? Thank you.